against kingdom. There shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world, and then shall the end come.
Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?
Our subject today, First Step to Armageddon, December 23, 2016. This is one of those times when you can put your finger on the calendar and say a prophecy was fulfilled this day. The Bible prophesies that the international community will invade Israel because of its annexation of Jerusalem as its capital. The resulting battle will be the famous future battle called Armageddon. The United Nations took the first fateful step toward Armageddon on December 23rd, 2016. To grasp this, we need to understand the history. Jerusalem became Israel's capital around 1000 BC when King David conquered the city of Jebus, the home of the Jebusites. He moved Israel's capital from Hebron to Jebus, changing the name of the city to Jerusalem. Jerusalem served as Israel's capital for the next 1,070 years. King David, the famous king of Israel, said this concerning Jerusalem: "If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy." Now let's talk about Israel's first temple. Solomon, King David's son, built Israel's first temple on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. When it was finished in 968 BC, God said to Solomon, this is recorded in 1 Kings 9:3, "I have hallowed this house which thou hast built to put my name there forever, and mine eyes and my heart shall be there perpetually." Now, when Solomon finished the temple, at the dedication of the temple, fire supernaturally fell from heaven. We read about this in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 1 through 3. "Now, when Solomon had made an end of praying, the fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of the Lord filled the house. And the priest could not enter into the house of the Lord because the glory of the Lord had filled the Lord's house. And when all the children of Israel saw how the fire came down and the glory of the Lord upon the house, they bowed themselves with their faces to the ground upon the pavement and worshiped and praised the Lord, saying, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever." It's so interesting that God specifically said he would put his name in Jerusalem forever. It's recorded in 1 Kings 11:36. "And unto his son will I give one tribe, that David my servant may have a light always before me in Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen me to put my name there." That's when the battle for Jerusalem began, when God announced that he would place his name in Jerusalem. Satan heard it, and the struggle for control over Jerusalem began. There have been more wars fought over the city of Jerusalem than over any other city on earth. The struggle for Jerusalem is more than a political conflict. It is a spiritual battle between God and Satan, between light and darkness. Jesus prophesied the destruction of Jerusalem in Luke chapter 19, verse 41 through 44. And when he was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it, saying, if thou hadst known, even thou, at least in this thy day, the things which belong unto thy peace. But now they are hid from your eyes, for the day shall come upon thee, that thine enemies shall cast a trench about thee, and compass thee round about, and keep thee in on every side, and shall lay thee even with the ground, and thy children with thee, and they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another, because thou knewest not the time of thy visitation. Jesus said, this would happen. Jerusalem destroyed, the temple leveled, because the Jews had rejected the coming of their Messiah. Well, it came to pass, not many years later, Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. Fulfilling the prophecy of Jesus. That began the time that we call the Jewish exile. The Jews were forbidden from being in Jerusalem and then driven into exile by the Roman Emperor Hadrian in 135 AD. But they never forgot Jerusalem. For the next 1,900 years, religious Jews prayed three times each day, facing Jerusalem, asking God to return them to Jerusalem and to allow them the rebuilding of their temple there. Well, we all know that Israel was guided out of Egypt way back 1,500 years before Christ. That was called the first Exodus. But the second Exodus, it tells us that after 6 million Jews perished in World War II and Hitler's horrible Holocaust, the Jewish people from around the world were seized with a compulsion to go home to their promised land. Jewish people were pleading with world leaders to establish a homeland for the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Finally, after it was realized that 6 million had died during World War II under the hands of Adolf Hitler, on November the 29th of 1947, the UN voted to create a Jewish homeland. The UN General Assembly voted to partition the territory called Palestine into a state for the Jews and a state for the Arabs. This decision was made by UN Resolution 181. When that action was taken by the world community, the Jews accepted the partition, but the Arabs rejected it. The Jews were so happy to have a homeland after 2,000 years of exile that they accepted the partition plan, even though their part did not nearly include all of the territory of the biblical promised land. The Arabs rejected the partition plan, choosing to wage war against the fledgling Jewish state in an attempt to eradicate it before it could breathe its first breath. Well, the UN, when they were dividing the land called Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state, they had to do something with Jerusalem. The dispute over Jerusalem was so hot that the UN decided to have a special plan for Jerusalem. The resolution 181, part 3D, on the status of the city of Jerusalem, tells us what was going to happen. The statute elaborated by the trusteeship council on the aforementioned principles shall come into force not later than October the 1st of 1948. It shall remain in force in the first instance for a period of 10 years, unless the trusteeship council finds it necessary to undertake a reexamination of these provisions at an earlier date. After the expiration of this 10-year period. The whole scheme shall be subject to reexamination by the Trusteeship Council in the light of the experience acquired with its functioning. The residents of the city shall be then free to express by means of a referendum their wishes as to possible modifications of the regime of the city. I want to pause right there to tell you that's never happened. Even though the UN said after 10 years, the inhabitants of Jerusalem can vote, yet now here we are 50 years, they still not had a chance to vote as to the status of Jerusalem. Well, after the United Nations partitioned the land into an Arab state and the Jewish state. The Jews accepted it. The Arabs didn't want a state. They said, we want to just annihilate the Jews. Finally, on May the 14th of 1948, Israel declared independence. The British Mandate had ruled the Palestinian territories since it was conquered from the Turks during World War I. The British ended their mandate on May 14th of 1948. This forced Israel to declare independence that same day. Five Arab nations attacked Israel the very next day, May the 15th. Let's talk about the War of Independence. Israel's population at this time was 600,000. Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and Iraq launched attacks against the newborn state on May the 15th. Miraculously, Israel retained the territory of the UN partition plan, even gaining an additional 5,000 square kilometers. After about a year of war, there was a ceasefire agreement. The ceasefire agreement with Jordan happened on April the 3rd of 1949. The ceasefire line should not be considered the permanent border, according to what the armistice contract said. It said, no provision of this agreement shall in any way prejudice the rights, claims, and positions of either party hereto to the ultimate peaceful settlement of the Palestine question, the provisions of this agreement being dictated exclusively by military considerations. Jordanian forces remained in most positions held by them, particularly East Jerusalem, which included the Old City. Jordan continued to occupy East Jerusalem and the West Bank from 1949 to 1967. 1967 came, and the Six Days War was launched in another attempt to wipe the Jewish state off the map. It began June the 5th and continued till June the 10th of 1967. On May the 16th, 1967, Egyptian President Nasser shocked the world by asking the United Nations to withdraw its forces from the Sinai. To the surprise of many, his request was honored 2 days later. Moreover, the Egyptian president closed the Straits of Tehran on May the 22nd, an act of international war. Sensing that war was now likely, King Hussein aligned Jordan firmly with Egypt, suggesting an Egyptian-Jordanian mutual defense treaty. Nasser immediately accepted the idea, and the treaty was signed on May the 30th. When the war began, Jordan attacked Israel. Israel counterattacked, driving Jordan out of East Jerusalem and the area of Judea, Samaria, the West Bank. In 6 short days, Israel captured the Sinai in the south, the Golan Heights in the north, and the entire West Bank all the way to the Jordan River. Israel had virtually occupied the entirety of the British mandate that had originally been promised to Israel by the Balfour Declaration in 1917. Let me pause just a moment to tell you about our new exciting Armageddon collection. What does the term Armageddon mean? Why is it so important in Bible prophecy and the last days? And what will happen between now and then? In our new Armageddon collection, we cover subjects such as events of the final 7 years, the revealing of the Antichrist, the mark of the beast, and the world's greatest revival just ahead. In this special collection, you will receive the DVD, Seas to Armageddon, November 29, 2012, our 8 lesson series, From Here to Armageddon, along with a printout of our 7-year timeline, our brand new DVD, First Step to Armageddon, December 23rd, 2016, plus a free DVD of today's broadcast. All of this for your gift of $140 or more, plus the cost of shipping and handling. To order your Armageddon collection, go to endtime.com or call 1-800-END-TIME. That's 1-800-363-8463. If I were you, I'd do it right now. Let's get back to our subject. UN Resolution 242 was adopted on November the 22nd of 1967. This resolution, 242, called for a just and lasting peace, which should include the application of both the following principles. One, withdrawal of Israeli armed forces from, notice this closely, territories occupied in the recent conflict. Two, termination of all claims or states of belligerency and respect for and acknowledgement of the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and political independence of every state in the area and their right to live in peace within secure and recognized boundaries. Notice that phrase. Free from threats or acts of force. Israel contends that territories did not mean all territories, since the second principle specifically states that each state should live within secure and recognized boundaries. Israelis contend that boundaries leaving them 9 miles wide at the waist could not possibly be considered secure borders. So there was quite a debate over territories or the territories. Lord Caradon, chief author of Resolution 242, contends that territories instead of the territories was purposely used to acknowledge that pre-1967 borders were not secure and therefore new borders would have to be negotiated. Caradon said, "I know the 1967 border very well. It is not a satisfactory border. It is where troops had to stop in 1948, just where they happened to be that night. That is not a permanent boundary." Now, the big question, does UN Resolution 242 call for a return to the 1967 borders? Arthur J. Goldberg, another of the resolution's drafters, concurred that Resolution 242 does not dictate the extent of the withdrawal and added that this matter should be negotiated between the parties. Does Resolution 242, as unanimously adopted by the UN Security Council, require the withdrawal of Israeli armed forces from all of the territories occupied Israel during the 1967 war? The answer is no. I'm still using the words of Goldberg. In the resolution, the words "the" and "all" were omitted. In the original form of the resolution, "the" or "all" was there, but it was taken out knowing that the borders would have to be negotiated. Resolution 242 calls for the withdrawal of Israeli armed forces from territories occupied in the 1967 conflict without specifying the extent of the withdrawal. If the resolution is ambiguous, and purposely so, on this crucial issue, how is the withdrawal issue to be settled? By direct negotiations between the concerned parties. All the words of Arthur Goldberg, one of the authors of Resolution 242. Let's talk about peace efforts during the last 50 years since the 1967 war, because everybody's stuck in place where they are right now. Well, first of all, in 1979, there was a treaty concluded between Egypt and Israel. So they now have a peace treaty together. Then in 1994, Israel and Jordan signed a peace agreement. Negotiations with the Palestinians have been ongoing for so many years. It looked like they had gotten to an agreement in 1993 with their signing of the Oslo Peace Accords. But it's never worked out. In 1998, Benjamin Netanyahu negotiated the Y River Memorandum. Again, never implemented, hasn't worked out. Finally, in the year 2000, President Bill Clinton met with Yasser Arafat and Prime Minister of Israel at the time, Ehud Barak. They thought they had a deal worked out. It fell apart at the last minute. Well, finally, by 2003, the international community had decided that Israel and the Palestinians would never reach an agreement. So they put together what they thought was a roadmap for peace, and they insisted that the whole world and that Israel and the Palestinians in particular comply to it. The quartet was made up of the Soviet Union, the United States of America. It was made up of the UN and the European Union. The big powers of the world said this is what you should do. But Israel didn't do it, and neither had the Palestinians. In 2008, Ehud Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel at the time, worked out a deal with Mahmoud Abbas. However, Mahmoud Abbas was supposed to get back to him the next day, never did. Then in 2011, the UN Security Council denied Palestinian membership into the United Nations. But in 2012, the UN General Assembly, where America had no veto power, voted to recognize Palestine as a non-member state. 2013, 2014, for 9 months, the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry tried with all of his might to negotiate a peace deal. However, it fell apart. Now, I want to back up to a very significant event that happened. In 2009, President Obama made a speech endorsing the 1967 borders. Here's what he said, verbatim. We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps so that secure and recognized borders are established for both sides. UN Resolution 242 said borders should be negotiated and the 1967 borders were not defensible. Some people even call them suicide borders. Well, Benjamin Netanyahu was very upset when President Obama endorsed the 1967 borders. Already, the relationship between Obama and Netanyahu was poisoned. Then finally in 2015, because Israel would not do everything that President Obama wanted them to do, the White House threatened to withhold its veto at the UN and allow the UN to pass a resolution against Israel. As a matter of fact, I have a quote for you. The White House suggested it could reverse its decades-old policy of using its veto in the United Nations Security Council to protect Israel. It could refuse to veto resolutions related to the Palestinians or introduce a measure of its own. That was the Wall Street Journal on March the 19th of 2015. So now President Obama is threatening to put a resolution into the Security Council or at least to withhold the U.S. veto from stopping a resolution. And let's see what happened. Well, after 8 years of rancor between President Obama and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Barack Obama finally got his revenge. Once the election was settled, Obama did what he had been itching to do. I'm talking about the 2016 election won by Donald Trump. Once that was settled, Obama did what he had been itching to do throughout his presidency. On December the 23rd, 2016, the UN Security Council passed Resolution 2334, and Obama didn't vote no, thus allowing it to pass. Here's what it said. It reaffirms that the establishment by Israel of settlements in the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967, watch this, including East Jerusalem, has no legal validity and constitutes, listen, a flagrant violation under international law and a major obstacle to the achievement of the two-state solution and a just, lasting, and comprehensive peace. Now then, Israel's presence in Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, violates international law. Item number one of UN Security Council Resolution 2334, passed on December the 23rd, 2016, clearly states that Israel's presence in East Jerusalem is illegal and is a flagrant violation of international law. The UN will invade Jerusalem, is prophesied by Zechariah in chapter 14, verse 2 through 3. It foretells the invasion of Jerusalem by international forces to enforce Resolution 2334. Here's what it says. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations, the United Nations forces, which come down against Israel at Armageddon. The UN invasion of Israel will trigger the second coming of Jesus Christ, and that UN invasion by the United Nations of Jerusalem will be the Battle of Armageddon. The prophecy of Revelation chapter 16, verse 16, identifies this invasion of Jerusalem by all nations as the Battle of Armageddon. Listen to it. And he gathered them together into a place called, in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon. Make no mistake, the world took its first fateful step toward the Battle of Armageddon on December 23rd, 2016. Don't forget, our Armageddon collection available now for the first time. If you're interested, give us a call. The number to call is 1-800-END-TIME, 1-800-363-8463, or go to endtime.com.
Do you believe we're living in the end times? If so, what's the one magazine you should subscribe to? End Time is the magazine designed to guide you through the end times. Irvin highly recommends End Time magazine so you can stay informed with what's going on in the news and how it relates to Bible prophecy. Call 1-800-363-8463 and get End Time magazine for 2 years for only $29. Call 1-800-END-TIME or go to endtime.com to take advantage of this special offer.
Have you always wanted to know more about Bible prophecy? Well, now you can. Attend a prophecy conference hosted by End of the Ages' Irvin Baxter. Call 1-800-END-TIME or go to endtime.com/events to see when Irvin will be at a location near you.
Christoph Rompa is with us. We wanted to talk to you about the latest news and information from TBN Polska.
TBN Poland started 24/7 broadcasting 1st of December last year, 2016. Cable networks and satellite broadcasters, they will take our signal from hotbed and also via fiber HD, and they will take TBN Poland to 82% of Polish households within this year.
TBN Polska is growing 82%.
Okay. 13 million households.
Exactly.
Okay, 82% is roughly in the 10 million household range.
Yes.
Okay, are you ready for that, my friend?
This will be great boom.
I love it.
Hi, I'm Holly Wagner, and my husband and I pastor Oasis Church in Los Angeles. And I have been watching TBN a long time, and I have always loved just being inspired by the interviews or the messages. And so initially that was my experience with TBN. And in recent years, I've actually been able to come on and help host shows and have conversations with people. And I think that's one of the things I so value about TBN is that just they bring people from all over the world in to have conversations about their love for Jesus. It's just exciting, the ground that's being taken and where the direction that TBN is taking. I think there's a commitment to reach a generation, a young generation, and bring them along the journey, surrounding them with the older, the wisdom of the older, and bringing a younger generation along. So I'm so excited at what's happening and just the future of TBN. And I know that the best days of this network actually are ahead.
In a moment, watch Manifest with Perry Stone preaching the Word of God.
You're watching TBN, celebrating 44 years of God's miracles.